All right, well, go ahead and get the meeting started. Thanks for joining us this morning for the sixth meeting of the LCB Cannabinoid Science Work Group. We're happy that you've joined us today, and we do have a pretty full agenda, although we may go through it pretty rapidly. We'll see how it goes today, but thanks again for joining. I want to go ahead and start with roll call. And I think I'll go ahead and get started with the top of the screen. We have Richard Sams here, yes. Jessica Tanani, Taylor Carter, right. We've got Justin Nordhorn from LCB. Who else do we have from LCB? I think I saw Carrie. Okay. Ryan McLaughlin is here today. Is Holly Moody here? Don't see Holly. Tracy Klein, I see you. David Gang. Brad Douglas is not able to join us today, nor is board member Vollendroff. I just heard from Sarah Murray. She will not be here today. And is there anyone I have missed? Think we have everyone there. Okay. I'd like to go ahead and move us into review of the meeting minutes from August 3rd. I think everybody's had an opportunity to review those. I know there's one change I want to make. Ryan, I have you both present and not present, so I will make that adjustment. You're in two places at one time. I know you probably didn't even know that, but there you go. So I'll make that
Wonderful.
adjustment. But I would like to know how you do that when you have a moment, as a side note. So, any changes that anyone wanted to offer with respect to the meeting minutes? Are we good to go? If we're good to go, let's see thumbs up. Anybody thumbs down? Everybody okay? Okay, sounds good. All right, so we can move into subgroup activity. And there has been a lot of activity, I would say, to get us to the point that we could discuss these draft recommendations and finalize them today. After our meeting on August 3rd, there was an additional meeting of the detectable levels of THC and future standards subgroup on August 22nd. There was a cannabinoid product safety guidance meeting on August 24th. And then we had another meeting of the detectable levels group on September 22nd, where we decided to combine both groups because there was so much crossover in the subject matter. But between August and the end of August meetings and the September 22nd meeting, we started to put together the recommendations that we're going to be discussing today. And that's what we want to focus on today is the substance of the recommendations. And so I don't know that there's really anything to report out from either subgroup, even now that they're combined. And I'll turn that to the subgroups. Am I missing anything, or is there anything anyone wants to speak to specifically before we get into the recommendation review? Okay, sounds good. So with that, I'm going to stop sharing my screen for one moment and we will bring up the recommendation document. One thing that the group decided instead of having an additional meeting on September 29th, because that was originally the plan, we decided to go ahead and do these revisions live. And that is the group had an opportunity to review a draft, provide feedback, and we're going to discuss the feedback on the recommendation portion of the document today. So that's been embedded into the document that you see in your screen here. There were some minor edits that were offered by some of the subgroup members on the executive summary. These are typographical errors, those sort of things. There was a minor adjustment that we made to the background here that the agency made. And then with respect to the introduction and background, really just goes through the history of how the Cannabinoid Science Work Group came to be, the structure of the cannabinoid science work group. And I know I'm going through this really rapidly, but I really want to get to the recommendations so we can have a good discussion about that. And then what we did in terms of deciding how we were going to move forward with detectable levels and future standards and cannabis product safety guidance. One update I do want to provide to everyone on the call, and for those who weren't working in the subgroups, is our collaboration with the Washington State Department of Agriculture on a laboratory survey. Initially, the detectable level subgroup wanted to do a survey monkey or something similar to our labs to kind of find out what some of their processes were, et cetera. We learned through collaboration with WSDA that they were doing a very similar survey. So they were happy to work with us on providing feedback on their survey, and their survey is still out. And so we'll incorporate and consider the results of that survey in the future. But as I understand it, it's not yet complete. Additionally, LCB enforcement and education staff now have information that they gleaned from RJ Lee to determine cannabinoid LOD and LOQ values that will provide the agency with additional guidance moving forward. And so we'll supplement the report with that information. Some of it has gone out to the subgroup, or that document's gone out to the subgroup, but we'll make it publicly available in the very near future as part of this report. Okay, anything that anyone wants to add there before we move into the recommendations? All right, Tracy, go ahead.
I just wondered if you could clarify that that survey has been distributed. It looks like in the report it had not been yet.
I have not received confirmation from WSDA that it has been distributed.
Okay, Kathy, my understanding is it went out earlier this week,
Okay.
but I don't believe it's anywhere. I don't believe that it's been tabulated or all the responses are back, but I believe it did go out this week.
Okay, thanks for that update, Jessica. Really appreciate it. And I don't know if we have anyone on WSDA on the call that can speak to that at all. I think I saw some folks join us from WSDA. If you are from WSDA and wish to provide an update, go ahead and raise your hand. We'll give a moment there. Okay, not seeing any hands going up. Tierney, did you see any hands go up?
I did not.
Okay. All right, thank you for that. So I'll go ahead and start kind of with an overview of the first thing that, or the first recommendation topic, and that was providing implementation pathways for any detectable amount of THC, and to bring that into the work that LCB is doing in terms of rule development. This has to do with the implementation of Senate Bill 5367. The group reviewed a variety of standards, right, from the AOAC, the ASTM, and the US Pharmacopeia Food Chemical Codex. And there's the acronym for that as well. There's two terms of analytical chemistry that are used throughout this document, and that refers to the limit of quantification. That's the LOQ. That's the lowest concentration of an analyte that can be measured by a method with acceptable precision and accuracy. And then the second is LOD. That's the limit of detection. And that refers to the lowest quantity of a substance that can be distinguished from the absence of that substance as with a stated confidence level. And that's generally 99%. So you'll hear those terms used today, and you'll also see those terms used in the document. So the first standard we looked at were AOAC SMP. So those are standard method performance requirements. I'm not going to read through each of these bullet points because we want to discuss the changes here. But one of the changes that was offered, see if I can get this. This was offered by Brad Douglas, and that was a clarification here on this sentence that says that even though the Department of Agriculture survey results from Washington labs are being finalized, that only additional information that might be useful is instrument manufacturing confirmation instead of branding confirmation that may help to determine instrument and method sensitivity. Does that sound like an okay? Are we okay with that modification? I think it helps to clarify. Everybody okay with that one? Okay. So I'll leave that as it as is. Also, the AOAC SMPR, have several standards. I'm wondering, Richard, could you speak to these? Since you were so instrumental in helping us understand these.
Yes, the AOAC SMPRs are created based upon the perceived needs for each one of these different sample types or matrices. And those are goals for methods. And because the different product types differ, the goals of the analytical method differ, and therefore the SMPRs differ one from another. But they all specify an LOQ and an LOD.
All right, thank you for that. And that is reflective of the conversation that the subgroup had around contemplating standards for different product types, because the detectable level might need to be adjusted based on the product type and the current testing standards that are in place in LCB rule. Okay, so moving on to the ASTM standards, there were some additional edits offered here, I think, that are clarifying. Again, we have one from Brad Douglas, where it's just striking some language because there was a duplication of language here. But I'm wondering, before we even talk about the edits, would one of the group members be able to speak to the ASTM standards and how they differ from the AOAC standards? So turning to work group members, Jessica, Richard, David, anyone want to speak to this? Even though I know that we speak to this in the write-up here. I think the thing that I noticed about this was ASTM looked at mass spectrometry, and I hope I said that correctly, as the standard, where the AOAC standards looked at HLPD. Is that?
Yeah, HPLC. And
HPLC, thank you.
Yeah, and I think that the thing that's important to note is that our labs predominantly use HPLC in the state. In fact, we would be surprised if one doesn't. And HPLC is often the technology that's used for cannabinoid quantitation. For example, California recently did a pretty in-depth review of technology and did their standards based upon HPLC. It's a piece of equipment that's standardly used in production labs for this.
Right, and one of the basis that we were thinking about, or I think the group was thinking about, was what sort of recommendations can we make that aren't going to have a huge impact on labs in order to implement 5367, or at least write rules around 5367. So that was really important. The other thing I want to point out about ASTM, and thank you, Richard, for pointing this out, is most of the ASTM standards are behind a paywall. There is a piece of literature that references them that Richard brought to our attention that we've mentioned here. So not everything is behind a paywall, but also, again, these were written primarily for mass spec and not HPLC. So edits here, again, this is just to clean up a repetitive sort of word in a sentence, and then clean up the language. And truly, I think the way this was originally written was kind of clunky. And so Brad Douglas offered some changes. Everybody okay with these changes? I think it clarifies quite a bit. Hope others agree. Okay. And then the other comment offered here from Brad, he says, it may be worth noting that HPLC UV or HPLC PDA, and maybe the scientist in the room, he can tell us the difference between those two. Noting these here to explicitly denote the type of detector. It's implied by HPLC, but for a report like this, it might be good to spell it out. So let's discuss that. What are thoughts on that?
I think his comments are correct. UV, excuse me, a UV detector is kind of a generic term, whereas the PDA detector refers specifically to a photodiode array detector, which is capable of recording absorption across a range of wavelengths, and therefore it's a more specific term. I use the terms, I use the more specific designation in my tables.
Okay. Others? Any other comment? So we'll go ahead and add the additional information here. And I'll just gonna keep that note as is, since it sounds like that's the direction we want to go here. So thank you for that. And I think that will help to clarify. We also looked at, pardon me, my apologies. We also looked at the hemp seed protein monograph. It wasn't something that the group decided to go with. I think the group really leaned into the AOAC standards to kind of guide our thinking here. There was also the USP expert panel on medical cannabis flower that we took a look at, and we didn't lean into that report at all. Again, and this is in the executive summary, but this is kind of where we landed as a group. And so the level of detection corresponding to this regulatory requirement is 0.03%. There was some additional comment here, and I think there was a typo. And I believe, Richard, there was an email that was sent where you clarified this. And I'm just wondering if we want to keep this line in here, or we just want to strike it, or we want to clarify it, and want to have a discussion about that openly with everyone.
I think I sent one of the emails, Kathy, and I would say potentially strike it. The labs are actually testing to 0.1 on a LOQ by statute, and so the LOD would be 0.03, and my thought is the 0.3 came in for them and hemp testing of fields. So we may be kind of comparing apples to oranges with this 0.3. I don't know if other people have feedback on that.
Yeah. Everyone okay with us just striking the sentence?
Yes.
Okay. It sounds good. So we will go ahead and strike that live. Okay, and so the group also discussed, and I mentioned this earlier, the potential variances in detectable amounts of THC across product type. And this was where some of the, in our August 3rd report out, we were talking about bucketing. And Richard had already started doing work on this, and this is kind of the accumulation of, this is Richard's work. And Richard, would you mind speaking to this? Because it really is helpful, I think, in moving forward.
I surveyed what is published, both in peer-reviewed journals and in documents issued by organizations such as the AOAC. And I looked at different methods. And as you can see under the left-hand column, I used RP to represent reversed phase, HPLC to represent high-performance liquid chromatography. There's the designation for the detector, the PDA detector. And then if there was some other identifying information, such as the AOAC 2018.1 document, I included that. In the next column over, I identified the specific matrix to which the method applied. The MDL is the minimum concentration of analyte that can be detected in the calibrators. And then the LOD and the LOQ, which we've talked about, reflect the limits of detection, limit of quantification for the actual material that's in question. So this refers to the analyte in the matrix. And then the rightmost column is the minimum detectable amount of analyte that's actually injected into the instrument. I find that useful for comparison purposes. And you can see here, a lot of these don't differ very much, telling me that the major differences between methods revolve more around sample preparation, the mass of material that's taken for analysis, the dilution factors that come into play, rather than the absolute sensitivity of detection of the instruments. So that was the purpose of this exercise from my point of view. In this table, there are methods that are used primarily by hemp testing laboratories and methods that are used by cannabis testing laboratories. And that's important because hemp testing laboratories often work at much lower analyte concentrations than do cannabis testing laboratories. And the yellow highlights in this table refer to the limits that are reported by cannabis testing laboratories. The other limits are limits produced by hemp testing laboratories.
All right, thank you very much for that. And then I believe the table goes on in this way.
Yes.
Okay.
And I think, Kathy, one of the things that's important to point out here is that within our WAC, we've specified that our cannabis testing labs have to be a little bit more stringent than some of these other labs. Since they're state-by-state regulation, you'll see differences. We're the 0.1, so you can see a number of those cannabis testing labs would not qualify under the state of Washington to be sensitive enough.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. All right, so I think the conclusion here is that there is a range of limits, if you will, that the agency can consider, that LCB can consider in terms of setting a detectable level, if that's the route that the agency wishes to take. But these are the recommendations of the cannabinoid science work group. I think we can leave that there. Any further discussion on this section of the report? Okay. So we'll go ahead and move on. The next item that the report contains is a section on product safety, product specification and manufacturing practices. We talked about defining some terms that seem to be really important to the subgroups. And that is ingredient, processing, conversion, potency, and synthetic, because these terms do not seem to be defined in statute or rule and may help moving forward. And it may be that this is something that the cannabinoid science work group wishes to work on in the future in helping the agency define those terms. And there's several examples given here of some of these terms being used within terms and phrases in rule, but not further defined. And so the group thought that adding additional clarification to some of these terms might help in studying product specifications and manufacturing practices in the future. So Jessica, I saw you were nodding. Did you want to add anything there?
No, I think that, you know, one of the things that we had a lot of discussion around was the fact that at some level, intermediate testing, testing hemp as an ingredient would be optimal because it's a little bit more sensitive. But the reality was, without definition of some of these processing and conversion and synthetics, it would be a giant loophole for people to use it as a potential ingredient and create impairing compounds downstream. So we really felt that these were important long-term for us to define as a state to kind of close some potential loopholes. I don't know if anybody else has comments on that.
I wanted to add, I was going to say very similar to what Jessica just said. A lot of these terms, when you look at them, they seem pretty obvious what they should mean. But the reality is, unless they're actually defined, because they have a potentially important role in the legislation and how it might be implemented, an actual definition for them is actually critical. Because as Jessica said, without that definition, it's possible for somebody to come up with an alternative definition and add in that loophole that she was just talking about. And so to avoid any kind of loopholes, avoid any kind of problems down the road, some of these terms really need to have a definition. In, especially when they have such a critical role in how the language plays out for the questions that we're talking about, like the impairing compounds, et cetera.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I may, this really is a great example of how we bring the science and the regulation together in crafting these definitions into the future, because there's definitely a place to bring those two ways of interpretation together. And I think this is the first step in that direction. I think we've seen it in section one, and this is where we can, the cannabinoid science work group might be able to take it even further. And that's around this thinking around product safety. All right. I think that's where we stop there. All right. Any further discussion? Go ahead, Justin.
Yeah, just a question for the group. Just to kind of clarify on those recommendations around the definition. So manufacture is in the Uniform Controlled Substances Act. So is there something in particular about manufacture that needed to be looked at, specified, clarified, or something along those lines, since we do have that definition there?
Justin, I think that we... and I need to go back into our notes on this, but I think that we saw some potential loopholes with processing and conversion in there, but I need to go back and look at my notes. I don't know, Kathy, if you remember
exactly. Yeah, I think that's exactly what we were talking about. The other thing, if I recall, is manufacturing of food products sort of seemed to, there seemed to be some confusion, some crossover there as well.
Okay, so it looks like, if I'm reading this right, recommendation is to build in the definitions around the processing, conversion, on those types of things into the manufacturing. So basically clarify the manufacturing definition in statute to go further to be more specific in this particular area. Is that accurate?
I think that's accurate.
Okay, I see some heads nodding, so thank you. Appreciate that.
We could do thumbs up, but I think the nods are okay. Okay. All right. So I'll go ahead and move on if there's no further discussion. All right. So moving into the third section, and I'm going to stop really quickly here. There was two just edits added here. And I believe these were offered by, I can't remember. I think it was Brad Douglas, or it might have been you, Richard. But just to kind of clean up the language there. All right, so the next section has to do with future discussion and consideration. And again, these are things that perhaps the cannabinoid science can science work group can talk about into the future. But I'm just going to read from this. The main concern was focused on what cannabis products are being consumed and that those products contain ingredients that are deemed to be safe. And there was additional comment from Richard here, and I'll just read it. I recommend inclusion of a statement that Delta-8 THC and its derivatives are semi-synthetic substances that are often contaminated with side products that are new chemical entities that have not yet been subjected to toxicological investigation. What do others feel about adding that sentence?
I agree with it.
Okay. All right, we'll go ahead. Others, I mean, in thumbs up, nods, add it. Okay, all good. All right, great. There was additional discussion around if pesticides are being used or when pesticides are being used and the environmental impact. That might be something that the cannabinoid science work group looks at into the future. And this is primarily a contribution from Brad Douglas, and he's added clarification here that the issue of pesticide usage should be further explored because there's background contamination, in many agricultural products, and many of these products are consumed in greater amounts of cannabis. And then he provides examples there. But then he's also added a clarifier here where he says USDA organic regulations allow residues of prohibited pesticides in up to 5% of the EPA tolerance, as long as the operator hasn't directly applied prohibited pesticides and has documented efforts to minimize exposure to them. And so he says consumers become concerned about this, but these crops are not tested for these substances. So that might be something that the cannabinoid science work group looks at into the future. Are we okay with adding this? I mean, I think it's a great clarifier. Just want to weigh in with the rest of the group. And do we agree that that's something we want to look at into the future, especially the way Brad's framed it here?
I think so, Kathy, and I think that our purpose kind of in this section was to say, hey, we need to continue to evolve our pesticide thresholds within this product, and it may end up being based upon product class. So if you're consuming 10 milligrams in an edible, you know, that's a fraction of a drop of water versus inhaling a joint, that may be very different. So at the end of the day, we may have different pesticide thresholds based upon the risk to the consumer, and it most likely will be based upon also how they're consuming that product.
Thank you, Jessica. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, to add to that, what Jessica just said is really important, that mode of entry into the human body is very important for exposure. Right? So something that is inhaled versus or that's smoked or otherwise inhaled, those are not necessarily the same, versus ingested. They have very different pathways and processes, how those are metabolized in the body potentially. And so that needs to be evaluated, needs to be part of the conversation. You can't just say this is a threshold for these pesticides across the board for whatever, because it can have a significant difference.
Right, and if I remember correctly, that was one of our subgroup's more robust conversations. I think that probably seeped over into the next hour. We didn't plan it to, but we had a lot of conversation around this. So, all right, thanks to the group for that. So we'll go ahead and incorporate Brad's suggestion as well. So another topic that came up was cannabis as a remediator. I think we've heard this in more places than just the cannabinoid science work group. But we talked about how cannabis pulls compounds from soils in different ways, and having discussion around that into the future. There was an addition that Brad offered here, and this is a footnote. We just need to, I need to find out what the page number he was referring to here is, Looks like we have a P period, but no number. So I'll follow up with Brad on getting a number. And this had to do with the pesticide testing. Turning to the groups, and again, there was a few just typos, word changes here. I don't think they substantially change the content or the thinking of the group. But does anyone from the work group want to speak to cannabis as a remediator and why this was important to the subgroup beyond what we've offered here?
Yeah, I can go real quick.
Thanks,
Taylor. Basically, just that there's a lot of evidence out there of the ability of the cannabis plant itself with various metals. But it's something that new research is showing that basically based upon like soil composition, you can actually kind of alter it. So it's something that can be accounted for as we move forward. So I think it's something that is definitely important just to keep track of with the ability of the plant to pull up so much of these metals, but also that there's ways to avoid some of these outcomes. So just something to, you know, keep up with the literature on.
Thank you.
And Kathy, on a similar note, I think that the subgroup would like to see, if possible, the state continue to do research, you know, potentially on hemp or, you know, other potentially legal, a little bit easier legal plants on how the soil affects the actual floral material that people are making these products out of, and see if we could provide in the future guidance for producers on safety levels that could be in the soil that would allow them to create safe products.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
I think one thing I would add to this to go along with what they both just said is that there's also variation in how the plant will respond to different compounds, both organic compounds, halogenated compounds, heavy metals. Those are not all identical. Not all heavy metals are identical. They don't respond. The plant doesn't respond to them identically. And the research is not very well established across the board. So there's a lot of open questions still on how the plant is going to interact with different types of compounds, different elements, different and in different soils and different environments. So there's basically what I'm trying to say is there's a lot that still needs to be figured out before we can make any really strong recommendations about what policy should be in this area. We just don't know is really the answer in most cases.
All right, great. Thank you for the clarification, everyone. And really appreciate the, again, this is one of those areas that we had a very robust discussion around, and I really appreciated it. Okay, so moving on, food safety was the final discussion point that the work group wanted to highlight again. And Jessica, if I could turn to you to speak to this, because I think this was something you were very interested in and had a lot to share. Could you speak to this section?
Yeah, I think that this is kind of interlocked with the prior two sections in the sense that depending on how much cannabis product somebody is consuming and how, we may have very different thresholds for what is safe. So there's a number of compounds that we have on our vegetables or our fruit that in high levels are not safe, but that in lower levels are, you know, allowable. And so I think we really felt that it was important to look at how much cannabis somebody is consuming and set threshold for safety around for these pesticides and heavy metals based upon consumption and quantity of consumption, and maybe have a little bit more, you know, rules around that in the future. And we realized that, you know, this is a new and emerging market. The rules were set in the beginning by ourselves and done quickly. Maybe that they could evolve in the future to allow, you know, potentially maybe certain forms of remediation in oil, different thresholds based upon how somebody's going to consume the product, and really make sure that we keep safety in mind, but we also, you know, allow some tolerances if the products are still safe. I don't know if anybody else has any follow-up on that.
No, I think you covered it really well. And again, go ahead, David.
Well, one thing to add, we don't want to come up with a recommended daily allowance of these toxic compounds. Right, that's almost where you think this could go, but you want to have maybe a warning threshold. It's like I remember years ago when I lived in Michigan, when we wanted to go fishing, and you would go and you'd look at the map and they'd say, you know, you're allowed to catch one fish and eat one fish per day in this river. In this river, it was one per week. In this river, it was one per month. In this river, it was like never. So, you know, because of the toxic compounds that were present in the rivers there. It's something like that. What is that threshold for these different compounds? Having that information available some way to people is going to be important. And figuring out the best way to make that available is something that we still need to come to a conclusion on, I think.
Sure. All right, anyone else? All right, so that concludes a review, pardon me, of the report itself. I'll just open the floor up for any questions, additional conversation, questions from LCB staff, question, comment, feedback, anything? Great. All right, nothing there. Anything else from the work group? All right, so that means that we can go. We're likely going to end our meeting a little early today, and that's okay. We've done a lot of work over the last several months. Kind of be nice to have a little bit of time back in your day, I'm sure. So we'll move into wrap up and next steps. So next steps for this report are to make the revisions that we've discussed today. And then we will make this product publicly available on our website. And it can also be, you know, shared broadly. Trying to think if there's anything else we need to do with this report beyond this. Turning to staff, anything I'm forgetting there? I don't think there's any. This is the conclusion of this phase of the cannabinoid science work group. Justin, yeah, you unmuted anything?
No, I don't think we have anything technically further.
Okay. All right, so that's the next step for this report and the recommendations that are contained in it. Logistically, we do have a meeting scheduled for December 7th that we're still going to conduct. However, it might be on a different day. Several staff from LCB will be returning from or in transit from the semi-annual CANRA meeting out of state. And I guess that brings me to the next announcement that I know many of you are aware of. I'm departing the agency as of October 15th. And so Sarah Oki, who's on the call here with us today, and part of the research program will be leading this work group after October 15th. So she'll be your point of contact. And she'll also be in contact with you about a potential rescheduling of the December 7th meeting and then meeting happening after that. I want to share that during one of our last subgroup meetings, I asked the subgroup if they'd like to continue to do this work beyond December 7th. And I heard from everyone in the room that they were interested. So that's something I think that the group can talk about at the December meeting whenever it happens. And I think that's it. Turning to Justin, anything that you want to add or that I've forgotten to address?
Just from the LCB overall, really appreciate everybody spending so much time on this. So you can tell that you put a lot of thought into these recommendations. We have some good, strong science base in these recommendations, and I think this is really going to help the agency move forward in some of the policy discussions that we're going to be having around this issue. So appreciate all of the back and forth, the subcommittee work on these particular recommendations. I know there was a lot more going behind the scenes versus just these cannabis science work group official meetings. So really appreciate all the effort everybody's been putting into this. It really shows. So thank you.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure to work with all of you. And to Justin's point, yes, we did a lot of work behind the scenes, as it were. A lot of telephone calls, and I appreciate all the time and effort that you've put into this. I think we came up with a really meaningful, useful work product. All right, if there's nothing else, we can go ahead and conclude this meeting a little early. Just calling on the group for one last call. All right, thanks very much everyone for joining us today. Thanks to the audience for joining us today as well. And look forward maybe to seeing you in a different forum, but I know that LCB is looking forward to working with you and seeing you again in December. Thanks, everyone. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Thanks, Kathy.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks, Kathy.